Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Pennsylvania small businesses have been hit hard by the COVID-19 pandemic. Many have been shut down for over the past month. As part of the first stimulus package passed by Congress and approved by President Trump, the Paycheck Protection Program was designed to provide businesses with loans, some that will be forgiven if the money is used for employee payrolls and several other reasons. So has the program done what it was designed to do? Joining us in the first portion of today's program is National Federation of Independent Business Pennsylvania State Director and former State Representative Gordon Denlinger. Representative Denlinger, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott. Great to join you this morning.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Gordon Denlinger, before we get into the PPP program, just if you can, I know it's probably a question that many people out there, through observation, haven't answered themselves, but give me a sense of what Pennsylvania businesses are going through right now.
Sure. You know, it's a time of amazing challenge, a time when, you know, just 4 to 5 short weeks ago, we were in the best economic situation we had been in anyone's memory. Folks were expanding their businesses. They were hiring. They were doing all of the good things that happen in good times. And suddenly, the whole landscape shifted. And so it was start bailing. You know, it was all hands on deck. What do we need to do to keep the ship afloat? And, you know, we at NFIB as an association of small business owners, we were just inundated with help. What do I do? You know, this is an emergency, unimagined, and so yeah, panic, concern, need to make very critical business sustaining decisions came right to the forefront. And so yeah, the early days were tough, very rough, and in some measure that continues to this point.
You used the word suddenly. Did that make it all the worse as to how quickly this happened?
It did. You know, going from a, you know, Thursday, Friday to a, you know, Monday where you're under a closure order. And, you know, I want to say first and foremost, health and public safety are number one. So we want to acknowledge the nature of what the governor felt he needed to do, and we are with him in that. You know, that is certainly needing to be said. But it was pretty bumpy. The initial closure orders of businesses, you know, there was, you know, plan one and then plan two and then plan three, all within a space of 4 or 5 days. And folks were just trying to navigate that, trying to figure out, am I open, am I closed, am I in the gray zone of unknown? So yeah, very difficult there at the beginning, and full of challenges, yet acknowledging, I think the governor and Secretary Levine saw what was coming and felt the need to take very strong action.
Just for context purposes, who are your members with the National Federation of Independent Business here in Pennsylvania?
Sure. We are truly the mom-and-pop type businesses that are out there. So average number of employees would be about 10. We're the corner deli, the card store, the hardware store. We're very much, you know, the people in the community that, you know, put the float in the annual parade or buy T-shirts for the Little League team. We say independent. That means not publicly traded. So if you're listed on a stock exchange, you're too big for NFIB. And national, certainly, you know, Pennsylvania has about 13,000 member businesses of all types and varieties, but again, very small, nationally, nearly 300,000 NFIB members. So it's a robust organization, but it's really about Main Street, Pennsylvania, Main Street, USA, and the folks right down the street who are our merchants.
So as part of the CARE Act that was passed by Congress and approved by President Trump, The Paycheck Protection Program came about, would provide almost $350 million in loans. 1% would be the interest rate unless you kept your entire payroll, continue to pay your employees. We'll get into some of the strings attached, if you will, to that loan. This has been around now, been available to businesses for several weeks. And I should mention, it's not just businesses. I got an email this morning from the United Way of York County. Nonprofit organizations are eligible for this as well, that if you have employees. So how has the PPP program gone so far here in Pennsylvania?
Well, we're getting better. it was very bumpy at the beginning, and that is, the nature of the whole program, $2.2 trillion, which was the third relief bill out of D.C. To pass and be signed. The small biz piece, as you mentioned, $350 billion, was rolled out through SBA 7A lenders in our local banks and credit unions, and it came so fast with so little, regulatory framework or guidance that our financial banking professionals were scrambling. SBA was scrambling. So the first days, pretty bumpy. And I know a lot of our membership had some challenging times. April 3rd is the day that it came up. And, trying to work with their bank lending officers and credit union folks who deserve, a shout out of thanks for trying to navigate a horrendously complicated situation and scenario. But it's getting better. Folks are going through the application processes. Banks are getting up to speed and largely have gotten up to speed. We're hearing applications are being approved. We're hearing that funds are flowing into, as a result of the loans. So a tough beginning. We're getting better every day. And some funds of relief are starting to flow.
When you say starting to flow, any idea what percentage? I mean, is it a small percentage? Are you satisfied, or the businesses, your members satisfied with how quickly they're getting money or how not quickly they're getting money?
Well, we hear it both ways. On the day that you get your account funded, you're a happy, happy camper. It's like this is the lifeline that might keep you going. If you're one of those people sitting there waiting, it's like the watched pot that never boils. You just like, when is this ever gonna come? So, different experiences that we hear, but again, the process is working. I would say our frustrations probably are more directed at the SBA, Small Business Administration level, and somewhat at the Department of Treasury, just for lack of guidance, changing the rules midstream repeatedly. So if there's some angst, it's probably SBA directed. But again, that was an agency that in its biggest years put out $30 billion in total loans. Here we're at $350 billion and looking at another $250 billion if the powers that be down in D.C. can get themselves agreed on it. So it's starting to flow, but mixed stories of members, some happy, some frustrated.
So just so those that are listening understand or have the context for the program, how is a business or an employer eligible? What makes them eligible for a PPP loan?
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Small biz is defined as 500 or less employees. And as you noted, nonprofits certainly can enter into the equation, which historically they never had. So that's an expansion. But the 500 and down employees is the sort of level. And beyond that, there's a whole structure, a 75-25% split on the use of the funds. 75% needs to go to payroll, and that means continuing to pay your people, and the forgiveness component of it is based on you getting your payroll level back up to its pre-crisis level in dollars, in FTEs or full-time employees. 25% of it can be used for mortgage interest, not principal, but interest, leases, rents, and utilities. we probably at NFIB would like to see that flexed a little bit, maybe move to 50-50. But the big goal here is getting people paid, keeping people on the payroll. And if that forgiveness is to happen, you know, that you got to get up to that pre-crisis level. And it's for a period of 8 weeks from loan origination date. So you know, the forgiveness period is an eight-week period from loan origination.
So it's designed to be a win-win if it works for the business owner and the employee as well, who will continue to get a paycheck.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've been asked, you know, well, what if I don't have any work for them? And the answer is pay them anyway. You know, frankly, this is to take the place of, you know, the other safety net components like unemployment. It is to keep people on payrolls. And then as the economy, we look forward to the time when the economy begins to open up, they'll move back into their duties and responsibilities. So, yes, as you say, it's to be a win-win, keep the business afloat, keep the employees being paid, and in that, there's some opportunity for loan forgiveness.
Gordon, what about the hospitality industry? And I'm thinking about those who work in restaurants and bars in particular, that often their incomes are derived from the tips that they get. What about the hospitality industry? Are they eligible?
They are. I can't comment on the tip aspect, but I believe that's included because commissions are included. So I believe, you know, back up to your level of tipped wages would certainly be part of the calculation. But, you know, and there is an effort to have all of the business and trade associations stay in contact around Harrisburg. And on a call yesterday, we were talking about the Restaurant and Lodging Association and their membership and the food merchants. And that industry is really particularly hard hit and probably going to be one of the ones that struggles longer than maybe some of the other businesses, just because of the nature of people's willingness to get on an airplane or on a bus or, you know, however they travel in tighter group settings. And so, you know, somewhere between that and the electronic and virtual experience that we're all having, we do think that the Restaurant and Lodging Association folks could be a little longer pressed on all of this. We anticipate that.
Let's take a call from Jennifer in Enola. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm sitting here listening, and I'm thinking of all these questions that I have. I'm a massage therapist. I work for myself. Part of what I do is to make money is work out of my home, but I also work as an independent contractor for somebody else. And I know that a couple of my buddies are probably listening. And I think I might have missed while I was waiting or while I was talking to somebody for this call, something about the payback. I'm curious, first, as somebody who works for myself and don't have employees, like what is required of you? This whole like having to pay it back, and I'm hearing like you can get it written off. Is that like permanently written off? You don't ever have to pay it back? Or is it just, I kind of caught the tail end of you mm-hmm. saying something about 8 weeks or something.
All right.
So that's mm-hmm. one question that I have.
All right. Well, I'll keep you on hold here for just
okay.
a minute, Jennifer.
Okay.
So Gordon, you know, we are getting, I will say we've received several emails, people in Jennifer's situation who are sole proprietors, don't have employees. Are they eligible for this?
Yes, there's the good news, Jennifer. Absolutely. Sole proprietors and independent contractors, 1099 folks are eligible. So this is a real expansion. We haven't had that in times past. And unfortunately, often sole proprietors paid into the system and couldn't take advantage of the benefits. So this is an expansion and it is a true forgiveness. So your fact pattern is probably ideal. You can take your payback up to its pre-crisis level, which is the criteria for loan forgiveness. And it is a true forgiveness. So if you get to that level and you're expending 75% of the funds for payroll, replacement, then over an 8-week period, then you're good to go for loan forgiveness. And if you should miss that threshold by a little bit, whatever, you know, the numbers exactly on payroll, and I'm saying this to people with more complicated, larger payrolls, whatever doesn't qualify for forgiveness moves over to become a 1% loan, 1% interest loan, timed out over 2 years. So there's some good things in this, but yeah, Jennifer, your fact pattern makes you ideal, and you absolutely ought to be talking to your bank or credit union lending officer.
Jennifer, you had other questions?
Well, it sounds like he may have addressed already people that do have employees, because I was thinking of the lady that I work for in Mechanicsburg that I work as an independent contractor for. So her concern may have been answered.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, I got some other questions.
It sounds like any other questions that I might have about like small details probably could be panned out with my credit union, which I am with PSECU. Do we know if PSECU is participating?
That I don't know by bank or by credit union, but absolutely give them a call, the person you normally work with, and they will answer that question first. And I suspect they are. That's a very large credit union. I would think they would be an SBA 7A lender. So check in with them. If not, check some other banks in the area. Some are broadening out beyond their current customers.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Jennifer. And I think that in a follow-up to that, that most banks are participating. Now, we're going to be talking to some bankers here in just a few minutes, and maybe we can get some of those questions answered. But, you know, she brings up a point, Gordon, and that is, how do you find out if you are eligible, if you have questions like Jennifer and some of the other listeners that we're getting here or sending emails, how do you find out if you are eligible?
You know, if you're a business owner, I would encourage you to work through the application process. There are copies of the application out online under the SBA website, and, you know, you could start there, but I think probably the easier approach would be to contact, again, your bank or credit union relationship person and just tell them your situation, kind of go down through it, and they're pretty quickly going to be able to say, yeah, we think you're in. Or no, we think you're not. And that said, because they've broadened the qualifications out so widely at this point, you know, the vast majority are going to qualify. So by all means, make the effort to check in on the program.
We have an email from a listener who says, I'm a small business that has trouble with all the programs. First, the laid-off employees are getting their unemployment, plus they're expecting an additional $600 from the federal government. If we call them back to work, we are bums because they will make less on payroll. If we don't bring them onto payroll, we lose the forgiveness of the PPP. So, Gordon, I don't know whether you can answer this or not, but where does unemployment fit in with all this?
Yeah, and that's a concern we've heard from many NFIB members. One part of it was a boost in the weekly take-home of unemployment by a flat $600, which is taking people above the rate they were at in some cases. And, you know, is the employer, as the person says, they become a bum if they go after this to try to deny them their unemployment benefits. You know, under law, if a person's called back to their job by their employer, they are obligated to take that or lose the benefits. And all normal unemployment law still applies. So that is still in force. That said, this is a challenge. And in fact, it's a bit of a concern for getting the economy restarted. If folks are making more money to not return to their job and the business needs to reopen, needs people, what do they do? We see some challenge in that $600 boost on the unemployment side, acknowledging it's a windfall, but I don't think this was supposed to be about a windfall. It was supposed to, make people whole.
Now, when you say that unemployment law still applies, one part here in Pennsylvania that has been made an exception is that part where you have to seek employment, right?
Correct. and there is that would be there. And you know, I'm almost hesitant to say this, but there are businesses that are scrambling for people in this situation we're in. So there are some opportunities out there. I say that to the employees. A lot of the employers would, you know, be wanting their dedicated people to come back to them. So, you know, that's a thing that has to be worked through. But there are certainly jobs listed out there at this time.
Anything, advice you'd like to leave with business owners, employees, as we end this segment?
Well, you know, it's been a time to make some tough choices, some hard choices, but, you know, there's a lot of folks who are really looking forward to getting past this. We acknowledge, again, the realities of the crisis, but better days are coming, absolutely. And the thing about small business owners is they are a dedicated, hardworking lot, and they will fight tooth and nail to get the doors back open and get their customers back, put their dedicated employees back online. So I'm very optimistic. We have to ride through this. We have to be safe. But beyond that, I expect some real return to growth and better times ahead.
National Federation of Independent Business State Director Gordon Denlinger, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott. Good to be here.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. So how are lending institutions managing the Paycheck Protection Program and meeting the needs of the small business community? Joining us now is Duncan Campbell, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Bankers Association. Mr. Campbell, welcome to the program.
Appreciate that.
Also joining us is Patty Husick, who is the President and CEO of Centric Bank. Ms. Husick, welcome to the show as well.
Good morning, Scott. Thanks for inviting me to be here.
If you have a question about a lending institution and the PPP program, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, so Duncan Campbell, your members, I understand that the banks, the lending institutions across the state were slammed once the application process was approved. Everything was approved and ready to go. Tell me about that.
It's been a challenging time for our members, but you know, quite frankly, the commitment that they've exhibited for their communities and their small businesses, I'm just so very proud of everything they've been able to do. I appreciate all that Patty and all of our members have done to support their small business community, and I've been here at Gordon Denlinger on the line beforehand, working with Gordon and with the Restaurant Association and with the Chamber and other business organizations to make sure that we're doing everything we can to support these businesses. But there have been challenges. I think we've gotten through the first wave of those challenges. This is an unprecedented program, a $349 billion program being administered through the Small Business Administration. And no disrespect to SBA, they're doing everything they can possibly do. But when you have a $28 billion as the most that you've done in a year, to have $349 billion put at you in an emergency situation like this, there are challenges, there are access challenges that we've experienced, and other challenges on just understanding the rules. But those aren't excuses. I'm so proud our guys and men and women have come out and done everything they possibly do, working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to get this funding. And it really is getting out into the communities where it needs it right now.
So that's the part that is probably most important now. The money is actually getting out to those who are applying for the loans.
That is correct. We are aware of the challenges. We weren't clear on what notes to use, and there were other sort of administrative challenges looking for that guidance. But I think understanding the severity of the situation, members have proceeded and continue to move forward to get money into the hands of their customers and their communities. And the stories that we hear are just they really lift your spirits when you see that jobs are being saved by the work that our members are doing.
Any idea how many applications your members have taken across the state?
You know, I appreciate that in preparation. I have national numbers. We've asked for the state numbers from the state district office of the SBA. I know as of yesterday at noon, there have been 900,000 loans authorized nationally, 4,500 lenders, $220 billion allocated. I'm waiting those numbers in Pennsylvania. I apologize. I don't have them specifically for our state. We're surveying our members as we speak. But I know that the loan volume, the application volume that had come in when this program was announced April 2nd to turn on April 3rd, just the volume that came in. And the way this program is structured, all lenders are able to participate, but not all lenders had been SBA certified. So there was a process that needed to go through, actually multiple processes for members that were either SBA certified or non-certified to get into the queue to be accepted. I talked to one of our members on Saturday that had just gotten approved. So it's not for lack of effort on the member side, the bank side. They're doing everything they can do to get through this process, which for many, it's a new process working with SBA.
You said that 900,000 across the country have been approved. Are there those that haven't been approved for whatever reason?
Well, I think the loan volume is just so high. I think as they're getting through, our banks need to do their due diligence. There's a process they need to go through to make sure that the loan is a legitimate request. There's concerns that, obviously in this environment, we always worry about fraud. I know I spoke to you last time I was with you, was talking about, Cyber Monday and concerns on fraud, and those fraud concerns exist. But I know our banks across the Commonwealth are doing everything they can do to get these processed, get them in, get them out, and do everything they can to support their small businesses.
Duncan, those were the days. Yeah. Patty Husek, I wanted to bring you in. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Scott, I wanted to just give some perspective, from Centric Bank, and to give you some stats on numbers of applications, volume of applications we've processed, what's been approved, what's on the street. So we to date have received 919 applications. And to give you a point of perspective, what we normally process, with a full underwriting of a loan is about 65 loans a month. So we've done that in just shy of a week and a half, 919 apps. To date, there's over 800 that have been, processed and approved. So right now we're about 90% of our applications are into SBA and approved. As far as what we have documented with our loan documents and cash on the street, about 30% of that has happened thus far. The total volume of dollars of that 919 applications were at $155 million. So our team, and similar to what Duncan said, our team is working diligently, around the clock. And a key piece here to be able to navigate to get through this volume in this short period of time is, how quickly can an organization adapt? How nimble can you be? Technology is key here. I know our team built a loan portal working with a third-party company in less than 48 hours, almost getting ready together to getting an assembly line. And to do this, to community banks in general were not made to, their back room. We don't have that set up that we're processing these quantity of applications on a weekly basis. But what it shows you, too, is that community banks delivered on this, and they were nimble. They adapted, and they adapted extremely quickly to deliver for our customers, small businesses, but also small businesses in general. Of those apps I gave you, Scott, 50% of those are our customers. So 44% are non-customers that we worked with because their banks either were not able to get back to them. Some banks and some of the larger ones actually, in fact, told them their chances to getting approved would be better if they went elsewhere.
Yeah, you bring up a real good point, Patty, and that is that, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk to the two of you is because if there has been a challenge for many businesses, it is that the banks or the lending institutions that they have gone to, that if they're not an existing customer, that they, if they don't have a history with that institution, that the banks aren't even, some of them aren't even listening to them. So, Patty Husek, you're saying that with your bank, that 44% were non-customers. That has to be one of the highest rates rates that I've heard.
That is correct. Those numbers are accurate, and we specifically targeted the communities that we serve, so central Pennsylvania, suburban Philly, and even touching some parts of New Jersey. So we did call out for that. Yes, we ensured that we took care of our customers, but also we're working with, we know those small businesses, they're depending upon community banks. They're depending on this money to help them, you know, get their employees back on the payroll and be primed and ready for business again. It's so important. Small business, they're the economic engine, you know, of our communities, and it's essential. You know, from the very beginning, Centric Bank has been the champion of small business and all community banks in general. You know, we stepped up to the plate and the challenge, and once again, community banks have delivered.
Let me go back to you, Duncan Campbell, and talk about that same issue. This has been one of the criticisms of the program, is that there have been banks that are only dealing with existing customers. Now, I understand that part of the reason for that is the sheer volume of the applications that have come in. But Duncan, that would seem to be a problem if you're a small business that has never had almost all businesses have had to take out loans. But still, if you can't get a loan from your existing bank or lending institution and have to go somewhere else, and there are some that are saying, sorry, we don't have a relationship with you, what's a business to do in that case?
Yeah, the volume, as you pointed out, Scott, is just amazing and staggering as far as how many applications are coming in, and you know, coupled with the fact that there are Bank Secrecy Act and anti-money laundering and your customer rules that add to it, and adding to the fact that our members are at social distancing and we're essential businesses, but if you look at how we're working in this environment, it's just it adds to the complexity of the situation. But no, I think the issue for me is we're at $230 billion of the $349 billion, and our want, our hope, our need is for Congress to appropriate more funding so that these pipelines can continue to go and get through their existing pipeline and bring on others. So I know our members and the banks across the state and across the country want to do what's right for their communities, and it is a challenge. It's one that we're working towards, and you see by Patty's example and other examples across the state, we're looking to see how we can expand beyond just the customer base in many cases.
Well, just so I'm clear and the audience is clear on this, so you're saying that one of the reasons that banks are dealing with just their existing customers or customers that they've had a relationship with is that in that case they don't have to be as concerned with fraud and some of those other challenges. Is that what you're saying?
It's part of the issue, sure. Scott, you've got, when you know your customer and you've gone through the application process and you know those individuals, to bring on new customers at this time, there's some issues that you need to be able to validate. And with the amount of applications coming in at this time, it adds one more step to the process, which our members are figuring this out, but it's just one other reason why it's a bit of a struggle and complicated situation.
Would an existing customer to a bank get a loan approved quicker than one that is a new customer?
Scott, I could suggest on, from our perspective, did we? Yes. We did prioritize our customers and ensuring that they got through our portal and the whole process, that they got through quicker. However, one of the things that we did to ensure when we saw the amount of volume that was coming in from non-customers, we brought more individuals, more of our employees into the process. So maybe those who normally are not involved in working with the loans, we have a big chunk of our employee base that's working on this to be able to handle the workflow. We didn't want to turn people away. We know they're happy. having challenges getting their loans. You know, the attention, there's a particular company in the Plymouth Meeting area there, Scott, and they had reached out, and it was a connection with one of our current customers who knew me, reached out and said, they're not a customer-centric bank. Would you work with them? They have been with another bank for 18 years. And they were not even able to get their lender to return their phone call. And I think the mass amount, or is their amount of calls that are coming into your office phone, your mobile, text, emails, you know, businesses are panicking and they're hitting you at every angle. And I think they want to ensure, they know the money is going to go quickly. They want to ensure they don't get left out. But what we did, again, is we took other resources throughout our organization, and we have the bulk of our people working on this. It's too important to our communities, but most importantly, it's too important to small business, and we needed to, and other community banks did it as well. We stepped up to help small business in the communities we served.
So we're almost out of time for this segment. I'm curious if you have some advice for maybe some businesses out there or even the public about the PPP program. Patty Husick, let me start with you.
Well, first, I would say to small businesses that if you have not had your loan processed, Centric Bank is very easy to navigate in our portal, and it's important, you know, to have your information ready and to get to apply ASAP. We know this $349 billion is going to run out quickly. As Duncan mentioned, there is going to be another round. We're not sure what that looks like, when that's going to happen. So time is of the essence to get your applications processed. And, you know, if that isn't Centric Bank, another community bank, find a community bank and to see if you can get that worked with if somebody isn't able to help you. Small business is too important in the communities.
Duncan, what about advice to customers out there?
Yeah, thanks. And I referenced what Gordon Demlinger from NFIB said previously. You know, reach out to your institution, reach out to your bank, reach out to your financial institution. They want to work with you. Look, these are their neighbors, their friends, their community. You know, people in the community that these people stand beside and they live with, and our banks want to be helpful. They've been helpful in many ways throughout this crisis, whether it's through loan forbearance or modifications and restructuring of loans, fee waivers, additional lines of credit. But my advice is reach out to your institution, talk to them. They will work with you. They want to work with you, and most of all, they want to do what's right by their local communities and their consumers in Pennsylvania.
Duncan Campbell is president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Bankers Association, and Patty Husick is Centric Bank's president and CEO. And I want to thank both of you for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott. Pleasure to be here with
Thanks
you.
Thanks so much, Scott.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. When Governor Wolf ordered all non-essential businesses to close last month, construction and road work stopped as they were deemed non-essential. Some state legislators are pushing for exemptions to reopen construction projects, as Pennsylvania is the only state to shut down all active public and private construction sites. Joining us now is PA Post reporter Ed Mahan, who has been reporting on this. Ed, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So what construction is and isn't allowed in Pennsylvania right now?
Emergency repairs are allowed, and that means work to stabilize a site, prevent weather damage. Construction of healthcare facilities is also allowed. For home construction, some construction is still allowed, and it's pretty narrow. If there's a final occupancy permit has already been issued, that's late in the process. And also, this Pennsylvania Department of Education has told school districts to use their own judgment when they decide whether their own construction projects are critical. And I should say PennDOT is, Governor Wolf has said that PennDOT is doing, you know, emergency and critical road and highway construction.
How are all those things decided, or who decides?
It's complicated. I mean, and I think that's part of one of the criticisms. Governor Wolf, you know, he put out this on March 19th and made the big announcement. And initially, he said construction was shut down. You know, the next day, he, you know, put out a new guideline clarifying that emergency repairs and healthcare facilities were allowed. And, you know, as the days have gone on, we've learned more. They've created a waiver process that also has its criticisms. But, you know, and that's part of the criticisms from Republicans is that there's too many these waivers aren't done fairly, or just that the whole process isn't as transparent as it should be.
So just for some context, Ed, how big is the construction industry in Pennsylvania, and how many jobs were affected by the shutdown order?
An economist at the University of Pittsburgh ran some numbers, and so overall about 280,000 people he estimated work in construction. You know, he estimated that all of them are essentially affected by the governor's shutdown order, because the shutdown order requires them to stop all physical locations work. The economist, later clarified that, there are issues about, it's tough to say how many of those exactly are affected, because some work is continuing. There's the waiver process that has allowed some work to continue, and, some of them might be doing work remotely. But overall, it's about 280,000 people working in construction. And overall, the economist estimated that about 2.3 million jobs total were affected by the governor's shutdown orders.
House Speaker Mike Terzai, who is Republican from Allegheny County, he wants to reopen all residential and commercial construction projects in Pennsylvania. That is if workers take precautions recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. What's his argument for why that's necessary?
A couple things about that. He says leaving sites unfinished creates a health and safety risk. So projects that already started, he says they need to be finished. And he also points out the state has seen a surge in unemployment claims, more than 1 million in recent weeks, as we've reported. He says that, that economic toll is a real hardship, and it creates real problems for people. And he also says that, they can take certain precautions while they're out there on the site. And he says other states have more construction allowed than Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that is important, is significant, is that Pennsylvania, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but Pennsylvania is the only state in the country that has shut down construction completely.
Yeah, I think I was talking with someone from the Pennsylvania Builders Association, and he says it's been changing so much, but he says that now it's Michigan, Vermont, Washington, and Oregon, four other states that he sees as having similar restrictions to Pennsylvania. And that's statewide. There are some municipalities, regions, and cities that might have instituted their own shutdowns as well. But California, for instance, the Bay Area, that has shut down non-essential construction. But statewide, Governor Gavin Newsom, he said he is continuing with construction. He says he's worked with the trades to come up with good plans for safety.
House Speaker Terzai said that, and by the way, is this in legislative form yet?
This is. So the update on this is, so last week the House committees, they took a bunch of action, and they passed this bill out of committee along party lines, that specifically Speaker Terzai's bill, that would allow open up, straight up just open up residential and commercial construction. They're also taking action on, it's a little wonky for a second, but it's legislation that requires the state to follow, or aims to require the state to follow, federal guidelines. And those federal guidelines list home construction as essential. So if that legislation were to pass, then the aim is that it would force the Wolf administration to follow the federal government and then allow home construction. And that one we might see some votes on today. Still early. We're waiting to see, but we might see some action today.
But part of that legislation that the speaker is pushing says workers taking precautions recommended by the CDC. What are those precautions other than the 6 feet social distancing?
Yeah, I was talking to some home builders about the precautions they were taking, just in terms of there's the natural social distancing, there's using masks and gloves and that sort of thing. I don't know about all the CDC recommendations at this point, but just from talking with the home builders, it's the some of the social distancing that they say is natural, just making sure that that's happening.
Mm. And you did talk to some builders. How are these closures impacting them?
In the Lehigh Valley, Tony Cassiola, he's president of Monogram Custom Homes, he said they've been in business for about 25 years. They used to average about $1.2 million in revenue a month, and now he's estimating that's going down to about $30,000, so a very significant drop. His company has under 20 workers. He hasn't laid them off, but instead of building new homes, they've shifted gears, and they're now focused on maintenance of pools, which is something they just sort of got into fairly recently. And Tony, he was a little surprised at first that pool maintenance was allowed or that it was considered life-sustaining. But he came around to the idea, saying that if you don't take care of pools, mold and nasty things can grow. But pool maintenance aside, that's still a huge drop in revenue for them. And so he's, you know, doing his best to hold on in the short term.
Yeah, the pool maintenance thing, I kind of raised an eyebrow when you mentioned that as well. But I guess I understand the health part of this. But we have, with Tony talking about the windows in particular.
Yeah, he said they got, we got a clip of that. He says they got a big delivery. He does these custom homes. Some of them are very big. He got a big delivery of windows.
So, yeah, let's hear that.
So we can't install the windows. We have to go nail plywood over all the windows instead, which is going to cost thousands and thousands of dollars. And then we just have to rip off all that plywood that we put on.
So what I hear there, Ed, is that he's saying it doesn't make a whole lot of sense in his opinion.
Exactly. He's saying they can do emergency repairs to stabilize the site, but they can't just install the windows, which would, you know, be, in his view, just as safe and would, you know, save a lot of money. And then, I mean, his concern is that, you know, these stabilization things, there's a question of how long they can really last practically and whether that's going to, these sites are going to be exposed to harm.
And he also talked about the social distancing aspect of this.
The risk of two workers working outside on a roof of a house 20, 30, 40, 50 feet apart is negligible.
So what about that, Ed?
Yeah, and I think you also made the point that, you know, like lawn care work, landscape, like the outdoor work, lawn care, that is still allowed in Pennsylvania. So I think that, you know, part of this argument that you hear from the home builders and construction is that there are other things that are either just as safe or possibly riskier in terms of contact that are allowed to continue. And so they see this as sort of like, you know, a fairness issue and also just a, you know, the issue of people not having access to homes. Some people may have already have agreements to buy these homes, to move into these homes, but they can't move into them now because of this.
So what do the builders want to see happen?
Ideally, they want to allow, you know, all home, they want the state to allow home construction to continue and specifically to follow the federal guidelines that list home construction as an essential business. At the very least, after talking with a bunch of them, they'd like to be able to finish projects that they already started, or especially projects that people have already committed to buying.
So how's this argument shaping up in the General Assembly? You touched on kind of where it stands right now.
Yeah, it's the new Democrats have come out pretty strongly in opposition to this. Governor Wolf has also come out in opposition. Health Secretary Rachel Levine wrote a letter to the House committee as they were discussing it last week, saying that it's too soon to open up businesses like this across the state. That, you know, Pennsylvania, she says, has to prepare for a surge. It has to do more to have all the proper equipment so that healthcare providers can respond to that surge, and that includes ventilators, that includes masks, that includes other protective equipment. And so doing this now, she says, would create a health risk. And the other thing, too, is, you know, the other argument from Democrats is that opening the economy up now, you know, if you do it too soon, then if there is a surge and a spike, then you might have to shut everything down again, and that would be even worse for the economy.
You know, Ed, and we've had this conversation with several people over the past month and a half, but it is a very tough decision, maybe one of the toughest decisions that ever have to be made, as to when is the right time to do this, and not just with the construction industry and the building industry, but with all the industries across Pennsylvania. It's just a very difficult decision to know when is the right time to do it.
Exactly. And, you know, Governor Wolf yesterday, he announced that he was going to be working with several other northeastern states, including New York and New Jersey, to sort of coordinate a response about when they reopen everything. And our idea there is that, you know, even if their approaches aren't identical, they don't want to do something that would, you know, be harmful to another area. So, for instance, if New Jersey opened up restaurants, you know, a week before Pennsylvania did, then, you know, you might get a bunch of people from Pennsylvania coming in to New Jersey to go to those restaurants and sort of creating, you know, more exposure and more risk. So they're planning to coordinate with other states. You know, some Republicans in the state Senate have objected to that, saying that the governor needs to be working with them on this issue and not governors in other states.
Hmm. A lot to talk about. PA Post reporter Ed Mahan. Ed, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be joined by Pennsylvania Secretary of Education Pedro Rivera, talk about distance learning. But there are a lot of topics to discuss having to do with education. That's coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk, so be sure to tune in.